football on off the ball.
We just don't have the climate that you can play in the winter. Mm. And we just don't have the climate that gets any sort of quality. We don't have the facilities to accommodate that. So it's only right that it would be from through the summer months.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
You're listening to Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's sports breakfast show. Yeah!
Evans coming at 8:15, Dennis Walsh at 8:45, Susanna in Paris, like a Netflix show. Hey. In the meantime, I can't talk to you yet because you're swallowing. Yeah, good, ready to go?
I wouldn't have been seamless had you not said a word.
I know, but I had to. Well, I had to fill for those 8 seconds.
I was in the process of swallowing when you mentioned that Netflix show.
Colin, how are you?
I'm well.
Arthur, how are you?
Flying.
I repeat, right? I repeat, there's the front cover of the Telegraph this morning. It's Peter Mandelson having his sock put on and the face is blacked out and he's getting his photograph taken and he's smiling for the camera. It's like, oh, that weird psychopath who could be working for any government in the world, who has access to literally every celebrity and rich person and has all the money on his own private island. No, this is nothing weird can happen with this photograph. It's definitely not going to end up in the Telegraph. You know what? Wednesday the 4th of February 2026?
Is that what you think of the Telegraph?
Why are rich people and politicians such morons? Why is it?
I would love to know the thinking.
Oh, it's me in a dressing gown with a young person. I'll pose for your camera. Oh, the camera's over there, is it? Let me smile for that one. What a bunch of weirdos.
Well, you get to a level of status in life that you, I guess, think subconsciously at the very least that you are somewhat untouchable.
Well, Mandelson had had.
Therefore, there are no repercussions. Yeah, but he was
out. He had such a seesaw career.
Yeah, and wasn't he out at that? And for a while now, he's been okay. So I guess you have a level of comfort that it's not going to happen to you again.
And the bit where you're like, yeah, I'll take the job in America because I'll go right to this. That'll be the least scrutiny I could possibly get, as opposed to just showing up in the
House of Lords.
Yeah,
he's gone from that now as well. Tough old week for what was it? The Lord of Darkness.
Was he the Prince?
Prince of Darkness, was it?
Was he? I don't know.
Maybe, yeah, maybe, I'm probably, you're probably right. I'm probably getting the Lord's thing mixed up.
Yeah.
It's always the ones you most suspect.
Prince became a Lord. Him and Tony Blair referred to as creeps in the paper yesterday by...
Creeps?
Creeps. What a pair of creeps. Fintan O'Toole had it. He's like, yeah, fair play.
Fair play.
It was obviously such a stunning game last night between Arsenal and Chelsea that we're leading off with Peter Mandelson and the Telegraph.
Mm. It is. It's strange when you think, because I was like 6 when New Labour came in, so you're like in your, and obviously there was so much crossover between British and Irish culture, like they're just there. And it's just you always, that picture you have of them then is kind of so sort of, obviously again, Iraq, excuse that, but like that's sweet spot there. Well,
they brought peace to our island, or they,
yeah,
on their side at least, it was like we can begin to work towards something here.
And it all seems so.
And they weren't Thatcher.
Positive and progressive and everything. And Gordon Brown's the last one standing. He just seemed genuinely decent, to be fair to him.
Gordon Brown.
Yeah.
Gordon Ramsay's the chef.
Gordon Brown. Do you know why that came up? Do you know why that came up?
Because you're still reading that book.
I'm still reading Margot Vera White's book, and he's all in the kitchen now. He's at Harvey's.
Everything's a plate of food to you now when you're looking.
He's at Harvey's. Gordon Ramsay. Do you know he was talking about it? The place was tiny, wherever they had, in like Battersea or somewhere. That restaurant, Harvey's. But the number of chefs that came through, I think it was either 6 chefs who won Michelin stars came through his whatever time there. He was there about 12 years.
Mm.
6.
It's quite a lot.
As well as himself. He was the first British one to win 3.
Was Bourdain Michelin?
No.
He's just a chef.
I think he must
have been. And then wrote this book about what it's like. Is that right?
Yeah, I think
he was both renowned and then this also amazing journalist.
I don't think he was. No, I don't think he ever got Michelin. I don't think he was that level.
No, it's Les Halles in New York was the place where he made his bones. But like,
he's no slouch.
Yeah,
sure, you could work there in the kitchen.
Like, What was his equivalent ability to a footballer?
Well, I suspect it was somebody who didn't quite fulfil their potential, but was still good, you know?
Has a big profile.
Bentley.
Bellamy.
Bentley.
Loads of those Man United.
No, he's no Bentley. He's no Bentley.
Of those overrated Bentley Man United players that would take us down a wormhole of like, he's not overrated, he was... I was like, alright, yeah, okay, whatever.
Great book, again.
Oh, Mandy, you came and you went without socks on. Says one of the... things got dark quickly in the YouTube comments at 7:35 this morning. Happy birthday, Troy Parrott. That's what we should lead with. We're not doing birthdays today. What age, Troy Parrott? Happy birthday.
24.
Correct.
Aye.
Play my funky music, white boy.
It will win.
Yay! Thanks, kid.
Yeah, he got the winner in the KNVP Cup quarterfinal.
If they don't win this now, having got an Ajax manager sacked by pumping them earlier in the competition, it would feel like an injustice on their from their fans' perspective, I presume.
They haven't won said cup since 2013. So this could be a bit, and they've only won it four times in total.
Well, that'd be amazing.
You know?
A trophy,
so
a medal.
An assist and a goal. Lovely assist. The assist is more impressive than the goal. Goal was a poacher instinct effort. Beautiful header. Liam Scales would be blushing if he was watching it. Such a good header for an assist. So a great night. We'll do a bit of Irish football later in the show, won't we?
Yeah. He was lucky.
They lost the final last year.
Did they, yeah?
I forgot that. Yeah, he scored in it. They lost on penalties.
What's the name of the book, Arthur?
Oh, I don't know.
It's Marco Pierre White's first autobiography.
Definitely his first one. It's class. I really can't recommend it enough. He's a great... I presume he wrote it himself. I'm not sure. It could be White Heat. No. It could be The Devil in the Kitchen. I don't know, but you'll find it. It's great. Very handsome man.
Oh, he's your type, is he?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not why I'm reading it, but very handsome man. He was always talking about it, because he was like 6'3". He was just very, obviously, he's like from a working class background, council estate in Leeds, which he does remind you a lot about. But he...
One of the best things the restaurant did was getting him over to do...
Oh, yeah. He's just compelling. He's very compelling.
And have you eaten in the restaurant in Dublin?
Oh, Jesus, no. I haven't. Colin recommended it once. Mm. Didn't end up going, though.
Do you like steaks?
Yeah, I'm more of a fireman. You've been to fire?
Yes.
Yeah. I like fire.
Fire's good, yeah. Very good.
Never been.
Oh, you should go.
Beside the Mansion House.
No, I know it. Big building. Big place for graduations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Marco Pierre was outstanding. Stupendous. Steak was so good, I laughed.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good.
That was my review. Amazing. He wasn't there now, but it's a great clip of him. Actually, someone goes up to him and he says, my steak is overdone, you know, an overzealous patron, and the level of disdain that he gives her back in that look, it's one of those open plan kitchens for TV, and it's just kind of furrowed brow, eyes down, just staring at her saying it's not overdone, and gives it back to her, and she's no choice but to
no recourse.
He's not doing it for. He's not doing it again. So no, he fought Ramsey, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
I think he was a big Thatcherite.
Was he?
I think so. Oh. There's definitely some clip of him. I forget what was her daughter's name.
Oh, I don't know.
There's some clip of him talking. So your mother was a great woman,
Maggie Junior.
He had a big vice, didn't he? Was it Marco? Did he have personal?
Haven't got to it yet. If he has,
I thought he was.
Well, let's not then.
I just thought he was. You know.
Yeah. Okay. Stop there.
Do you know what I mean?
No, we'll stop there. I'll just do the newspaper headlines while you look that up and save us from being sued by. He was on his uppers at one point, I think.
Who's which?
Yeah. On his uppers at one point.
What's that mean?
I get it. Sorry. Kai Havertz. There was a headline in the paper last week about Havertz being done. And then since then, he's come back and scored two big goals. Carol Thatcher.
Carol.
Arsenal going to Wembley as Havertz seals Carabao Cup final spot. Wales are talking about getting under the skin of Henry Pollock. That's going to work. How many points will England beat Wales by?
Where is it?
Havertz has the last word as Arsenal book Wembley tickets. Arsenal 1, Chelsea 0. O'Gara, Ireland's 10 conversation has turned nasty. And then the history of post-Lions hangovers. They were talking about this last night. Owen was talking about it. with Chris Jones in a great piece. Rob Kitson has this stat that after the Lions, France win the Six Nations. Generally, four out of the six that there have been since the game turned professional, they've won. But Chris Jones is making the point, well, there wasn't that many English people. So the subtext was, well, there wasn't that many English people involved. Maybe they had an opportunity.
I'd also be interested. They won it last year, didn't they?
France won.
Yeah. So I'd be interested in how many of them have been back to back.
Never, France. It's, you know what I mean? It's a real struggle for them. It's ages. The one thing is that obviously England did have loads of their best players and their head coach and their coaching ticket together to go down to Argentina. So their strength and depth is now much better than it was previously.
Freeman's an outside centre now, did you see that?
Yeah. They were talking about that. It was like he loves his wingers, the other wingers he has. So he's got great strength and depth. And they're 15, they get the brand correct, not the Saxons, it's the 15 that will play against the Ireland, not the Wolfhounds, the 15. They have three unbelievable back three players, so they have uncovered a bunch of new ones. Just very quickly, the Irish Times. funding not a factor in the NFL decision not to return to Dublin this year. Roger Goodell saying he's not sure when there's going to be a game, but there will be a game. We had a wonderful time in Ireland. I think both clubs had a great time. Our fans had a spectacular time. One of the things about that game that stands out is that it felt like the entire island was in support of this. United. The NFL united us finally.
choice reading.
That game had more people come from the United States for an international game than any game in our history of the international series. And I think that's a tribute to Ireland. So it works from a tourism perspective.
They probably just have bigger worlds to conquer, do they?
Well, he wants 16 games and they've done a multi-year deal with Madrid. And I think they eventually want some European franchises. Like, why wouldn't you? You know?
Get
a European division going.
Yeah.
At four teams in Europe, essentially.
Oh, wow. Yeah, be interesting.
32 to 36.
They're going to Paris, aren't they?
Are they?
Did I read that? I imagine that. I think they're going to Paris. Anyway, do you think it would take off? Like, do you think that would happen here? Because, like, I don't even know how it would work. Like,
well, just have a conference. So you play your eight games, and so you play your six divisional games here, and then you play games in America the way they're.
And just the
extend the season.
So outrageous travel, be damned.
Well, maybe you try and do an East Coast swing and a West Coast swing, so you're away for a month and you come back. Sean Moran is writing about Cork. Cork desperate to put winter of discontent behind them as they face Tip again. So Cork Tip this weekend in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, Saturday evening.
Mm-hmm.
Under lights, 7:30. 7:30?
Probably. Turn up for 7:30.
he was talking about... He was talking about Ben O'Connor's comments post-match.
Spot on, yeah. 7:30.
We're going to do a piece with Dennis Walsh with a little bit later on. Channeling a synthesis of Brian Cody's pie-ins to lost physicality, as well as Patrick Pearce's more alarming views that the old heart of the earth needed to be warmed with the red wine of the battlefields. The Cork manager complained they're trying to take the manliness out of the game. I just thought that was a great quote. Bit of Patrick Pearce and Peter Mandelson. What other show is giving you that?
No show. No show's giving you that.
Go on. Go on, tell us, what other show?
Do you like the manliness thing?
I think that the rules of the game are such that it's possible to use your physicality in a way without dunting people in the face with the hurl and dunting them in the balls with the hurl and like...
That's not what he meant though, is it?
I just think that like the being allowed to flake away, like why are you hitting people? You don't actually need to hit them. You can shoulder people.
It's really interesting though. The only thing that I find it is difficult with that, and I don't know if it's maybe what he's kind of getting at as well, is that there's an inconsistency to how their rules are going to be reffed. So like if you take say that Limerick Waterford game at the weekend. That hung over, it more or less was decided by a foul, a Limerick defender and a Waterford attacker. It's that one where they get like the black card.
A clear goal scoring opportunity.
Yeah. And that's it, scores penalty. And that's kind of the game's always kind of kept at that point from then on. But like, as you see afterwards, I don't know, was it Anthony Daly or someone afterwards was saying like, oh, geez, thought that was pretty harsh. So you can say, right, in a world that won't be given another time round. A different referee will see that differently, won't give it. And it's really hard then to kind of go, And then you see, like, from the other game, the Tip Galway game, the first in the horrible weather, I was like, sure, it was throwing all over the place. It was kind of, it was just like, you can't, and it's no one's fault. You can't, the ref couldn't see them. I think it was Sean Stack that night. You just couldn't do it. You couldn't measure it. But, like, again, the decisive Tipperary goal comes from a pretty clear,
there you go.
And it's like, that's where the game goes. So I just think that there's a difficulty now more than ever where it's going to be, the games are going to be so tight that it'll be decided on margins that are, at, in their nature, almost impossible to have a regulated view on. You're going to have, increasingly, I think it's going to become a bigger and bigger problem that you're going to have contentious decisions that you're just, sometimes they'll be gotten, sometimes they won't, sometimes they'll be gotten wrong, sometimes they'll be gotten right.
It's funny how, like last year, the All-Ireland semi-final.
Well, sorry, yeah. Well, that's, yeah, that was
that was freak. Human error, right? Yeah. But other than that, you wouldn't have said that the actual implementation of the rules was such a massive issue. Now, maybe that's because there's a blowout in the final and there's a blowout in the other semi-final and Dublin overcame a man being sent off in the quarter-final that mattered. But I don't know, was there anything in the... Did something happen in the Munster final or in the Munster Championship last year that stands out? I suppose what I'm asking is this a league issue where everybody's getting up to speed on stuff and they're implementing rules that aren't implemented later on in the year?
Possibly. And I think that if it's a game, if that's a championship game, maybe it's a little bit less... I always wonder with the refs, are they a little bit less likely to veer towards a really decisive decision as the stakes get higher? If you're unsure, say.
Yeah, you quail from it.
You're just like, ooh, this will be decisive. If you're 50, I'm not saying they'll do it if they think it's right, but if they are anyway on the fence, are you more prone to kind of... It must affect, no more than the players, it must affect the referee's perspective on things. The higher the stakes, the higher the...
Yeah.
Like, it has to.
Yeah.
But I, in terms of like where that falls in with manliness, like, I don't know. Like, James Cahill's point was pretty...
We should play people a little bit later on.
Yeah, I will. So. But have it for Dennis anyway.
What's the penalty for if you're deemed to have thrown the ball inside your own square?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't think they're going to give it. But it's true because there's never been... I can't remember a controversy discussion in an All-Ireland final. You know? I can't remember a discussion about it.
Well, look, the knock on Limerick is that they were the ones who perfected it.
Yeah, well, it was Keane Lynch looked like he was flaking the ball to you, but like, you know, Keane Lynch was saying, and they'll all say, like, there's a split second remove.
Yeah.
So it's all legal. It's just, I'm too skillful for your eyes.
Yeah, and also, I think few enough of the Limerick All-Irelands were won in close games in the end that it mattered.
He threw the ball twice. Like, yeah, whatever. It's this time. Whatever.
We don't get good.
We did a piece on this that went to Congress, didn't it? And it got soundly.
Yeah. I do think, do you know the one thing I would say? Because I do think the way the thing is, if it's going to be so difficult to get right every time.
Yeah.
I don't think there should be a scorable free a throw-in pass.
Yeah, what is the penalty, especially if you're really close to the opposition goal?
A throw-in.
I'd say, no, I'd say you get your free, but indirect. Yeah, maybe people scoff at that.
Ah, right.
I just don't think you should be, because it's like, they can score from everywhere. So it's like, if you hand pass a lot or a miss or whatever, be it like on purpose, be whatever else, you will end up more or less it's a score against you.
I think it was John Fogarty was in the paper yesterday, the Examiner, writing about how to fix the game. I was like, okay, it was pretty good, but anyway, okay. And one of his things was the 65 is now too easy.
Yeah.
Actually, making it indirect would be the thing to do. He was saying, move it back to the point where it's going to end up dropping in the square, which also would be carnage and grace, right?
But on your own 45 or something.
65, yeah. 65 is the reward.
No, 65s are now too much...
Too routine.
Too routine and too easy for what they are for, right? So the Arthur's indirect idea is great. I'm just saying that we could extend it if the 65, if everybody agrees, which I'm sure they don't.
No,
that the 65s not. Need fixing.
So the equivalent of a corner, because the ball's been...
Yeah.
Saved, for want of a better term, around the corner. So the equivalent from another sport is you have a corner rather than a penalty.
Yeah. The one thing I would counsel you against is comparing it to football straight away, because this is a stillborn idea as soon as you do that. Oh, they're ripping it off football.
No, you just come up with the idea and it sounds like that.
I know, but you can't tell them that. You have to sneak it in.
Who?
The people who might be voting. Congress.
I don't know that.
I saw your man up and off the ball and it's a corner from football.
But I don't think they would have been designed to have been scored so freely.
Yeah.
It wasn't when it was brought in, like, it wasn't
They're being.
When Larry Tompkins was nailing the 40s, 45s, I was like, "Ooh, this is amazing."
The game you can being, do that. Punished for its increased skill
and size and ability. Yeah,
the players, speed and the speed. The players, yeah.
They're being punished for getting better.
And well, you say that. There is a the counter thing would be that the ball is travelling much further now than it used to, because the ball used to be much heavier and
yeah, but you still have to be accurate. It's not a long puck contest, so you still have to be accurate.
I don't love how free scoring it's become, I won't lie.
Yeah,
because it does increasingly, I think you were saying earlier weekend, it does increasingly feel like that basketball thing.
Pay attention for the last 15 minutes.
If two teams are kind of somewhat in range of one another, then nothing's really a given until it comes to the end. Now, that's not, what's the alternative to that? You said, well, it's like, so you want washouts. It's like, not that either, but like you want, I don't know. I just don't want, I don't like when there's just a score constantly, score. Mm. When a miss is almost more fatal than a score is valuable.
If you shoot wide, are you on the defensive straight away?
Well, so no, because Limerick crunched the numbers and were like, take 40 shots.
Take all the shots.
Doesn't matter if they go, because we've set up defensively from their puck out and we're going to win it back.
But that's the incredible thing. Would you see that now in Gaelic football as well, where the thing has been, because I think there was something crazy at the weekend where Galway, maybe it was just the second half, was it something like 4 of 13? They only won 4 of their 13 own kickouts against Armagh in the second half. I think it was something like that. There was something outrageous in terms of, like, for a team that won a game, it was kind of like, how the hell have they done this? But it's that that same thing with the hurling. Like, I don't, you can always still go short in the hurling, but you'd like more ball in play, I think, or just kind of something. Now look, I'm not complaining, because it's great, like, but it's just, there's something in games where it is like 225 to whatever, that's like, that's a lot of scores, that's a lot of shots. For sure.
Yeah, you have to make the ball heavier, wouldn't you? Do something, because you're not going to reduce the skill of the players.
No, you're not. Make the post smaller.
It's only going to get better. Yeah, make the goals narrower.
No, you can't do that.
Could you do that without telling anyone?
No, you couldn't. You can't do that.
Think anyone will pick it up?
Well, the footballers would. The footballers
switching for.
We're having good shots.
Switching from code to code.
What's that thing from? Was
that movable post?
Was it? It wasn't Larry Bird. No, it was in that. You know that Bill Bradley, that John McPhee book, Sense of Where You Are. It's a great book. He wrote about it when he was at Princeton. He went on to be an NBA player, senator, whatever else. But there was a thing where he was out on a court and he was shooting threes or practicing shots and missing. I was like, something's wrong. And it was like, that net's not the right height.
Right.
And they checked, and it was like a fraction of an inch shorter than where it used to be. And he was that in tune. So to your point with the shooting, I wonder if it's that precise yet, where the players are like, no, that's not right. That's... I know exactly what I've done there. That should have gone over.
Yeah. They would definitely have the feel for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would never be able to prove it in the court of law, like, but they'd have a feel and an instinct that should have gone over for sure. I don't know. I always feel that 65 is a reward, and it should stay as is. It's like, it was attacking play. You nearly scored, you didn't.
Here's a point,
yeah. Here's a really good chance to score a point. Yeah. Because it's not, I don't think it's scrimptive of a corner. Speaking of corners in another sport... Jesus Christ, like, when are we going to start talking about Arsenal?
Well,
give them their dues, like.
Carabao Cup.
Second
their first, leg.
Their first final since.
First leg.
FA Cup final, was it?
First League Cup final appearance since.
2010?
The 80s.
2018.
Was it?
Which isn't bad. That day they got hammered by Manchester City in the final. And Gary Neville went to town on them during that game. Increased his...
Was that Wenger's last season?
Yes, correct.
Right.
He was apoplectic. Anyway, they do a job last night just... And the reason that we've taken so long to talk about this... Right,
there's a lot going on in the world.
But we were talking about chefs, renowned chefs at the start, you know? We buried sport here because this game seemed to annoy a lot of people, you know, last night. Arsenal weren't up to much. Chelsea had this master plan, according to Gary Neville, that it was going really well. This back three and then the wing backs stifling Arsenal. Couldn't get anything from this game. And then the plan was stay in the game, and then pounce and attack. Brought on Cole Palmer and Estevao, or Stevo, as Paul Merson called him, Stevo. And the thing is, they never really created any clear-cut opportunity, Chelsea. They had speculative efforts from Enzo.
Yeah.
Fofana had a flick at a corner. And Arsenal's goal on the night was last play of the game, virtually. Counter-attack by Kai Havertz, who was quite quickly becoming...
He's good beyond Coltiro. He's beyond Coltiro, I think. He's not a legend of the club by any means, but he's somewhere in the middle of Coltiro and legend. The fans love Kai Havertz.
He's obviously going to play a lot of football between now and the end of the season.
And there was no respectful celebration against his old club. It was pointed at the crest, straight to the fans. And
he
won the Champions League for Chelsea, of course.
It looked like he was going to kiss the badge and then decided against it.
They're just friends. So they did the job at the end. Paul Merson, Chelsea supporter, Paul Merson, despite being a legend of Arsenal, was fairly exasperated full time. But that's not how you lose a semi-final.
Now you gotta go down.
But it was because Gary Neville was calling it a master plan for the whole thing, right? So
Gary Neville really dislikes Arsenal.
I don't know if that's true. This is the whole Martin Tyler Liverpool thing, isn't it? I don't think that's true.
Master plan. Like you're a goal down going into that game.
I guess he was thinking they're stifling, and then they hit them. Right. Yeah, but now, if Chelsea got the winner,
if you don't get the winner, it's not a master plan.
But into extra time, and they won the game on penalties. Would we be talking this morning about that was brilliant by Chelsea? So that was always going to be determined by the result. Even though it's the performance we're talking about, it's the result that determines it.
It's not if it's a knockout game. The result is really all that matters.
The thing about Chelsea is there is this talk at the moment about Arsenal having a lack of a star forward. Do you see this thing that was kind of taken off? Was it Jamie Carragher starting? And is that Premier League winning sides, they have a guy.
They
don't have a world-class final third player. And people say, oh, Bukayo Saka. And it was like, I don't know why, but it's an intangible feel of, I don't think it's Saka. I don't think Saka's the guy. You could say the same about Chelsea, right? Cole Palmer is injured off form. Estevao had his own personal issues and he had to go back to Brazil, so he's come back. So he's probably
He's a
teenager. Garnacho is handy as an impact sub the odd time. Pedro Neto's very inconsistent. João Pedro doesn't get you goals. Neither does Liam Delap.
They're not even title contenders, though, so...
Well, Jonathan Wilson is title contender at the start of the season.
Okay,
one of his rare follies, to be fair.
He has recanted that position.
Well, hold on. I wouldn't rule them out at least finishing second or third Chelsea, because this Premier League is wide, wide open to everyone, right? So you can talk about them with the money they spend, the status of the club, about them having world-class forwards. They just don't.
Yeah.
And this was a game involving two teams who aren't spectacular in the final third. Not saying they're poor. Not poor, I'm just saying by the grand scheme of things, with a club the size of Arsenal and a club the size of Chelsea, they're not too brilliant up front.
Totally fake thing, isn't it?
I suppose Arsenal scored four goals over two games. Like
Carragher's thing is like, oh, no one's ever done this. Like, well, I mean, okay.
If you go through every Premier League winner, you'll find someone who brought them over the line. Like you brought someone who was a cut above the rest.
Like, Vardy was a cut above the rest.
Vardy and Mahrez won them games, you know. Yeah. That's the fight. Now, you're going to have statistics, of course, galore to suggest. Well, Arsenal, of course, they've had previous seasons where Saka's that guy.
Yeah, and for Arsenal.
And then João Pedro might become that guy for Chelsea.
But for Arsenal, it's set pieces.
Set piece AFC. Has anyone won a league like that before? And look, there's a first for everything. Like, this could be it. They could be their own template, unprecedented. So, to win the league like this.
You were saying the league started in 1992 with Premier League football, because Arsenal have won these leagues before where they had Alan Smith up front. And you would not say Alan Smith is a world class, absolutely incredible, but they won their way 1-0. Like, that was a team that didn't have somebody absolutely sensational. I think Carragher's point is fair enough, their attacking play as individuals is below what you would expect from a title winning team. Okay. But this construct that they are therefore shit because they don't have that thing.
He didn't say they're shit. Carragher also acknowledged they're probably going to win the league. I'm not saying they're shit. That's the problem. Not every debate is whether someone's brilliant or terrible.
There was a thing before the United game where they were doing all the stats on Sky. And they had, I forget, was it 21? Where it's like Gundogan was City's top scorer in the league with 13 goals.
Mm.
So it's like, it can't be that unprecedented.
I think that was the only season it was between... The season that they had between Aguero and Haaland must have been that season.
Yeah.
That was the one where...
So it happened as recently as 4 or 5 years ago.
That was the one that happened. The one season it happened, yeah.
So they still had probably...
That's not an exception to the rule.
They had a De Bruyne. It depends where you draw the line coming back.
They had match winners and all that. You know, you can rely on them to win the game for you.
Arsenal's squad is excellent. Their defence is brilliant. Their centre-backs are really, really good. Arsenal, good, going to be legitimate title winners when they win the league. I don't think it's, what was the phrase you used, wide open? Is it really? They're 6 points clear.
No, but
having had their blip.
No, he means like from second down.
You're disregarding Chelsea as a non-entity. It was like Chelsea could easily finish second or third here, easily, if they get their act together.
Yeah, but they're not going to win the league. They're not title contenders.
Yeah, but you're dismissing them as if they're a mid-table club. But they could finish second or third.
You said no team has won the league. Whatever Carragher's made-up thing was, right? No team has won the league, and Chelsea, and you go through the Chelsea side, and you're like, but they're not title contenders. And
I will say on points, they're as close to second as they are tenth.
Yeah, it's very tight. It's very contested. You know, this does happen.
You could fall back.
The magic number is 66-67 for finishing top five, and Manchester United don't actually need to win every game to get there. They actually only need to win, I think it's 10 of their remaining 14 games. Is that right? 14 games left?
Well, they still have, it'll probably come down to the games around those teams, so they still have to play Liverpool, still have to play Chelsea
away. No, it's less than 10, yeah.
Still have to play Villa at home.
You'd actually make Man United very strong favourites to qualify for the Champions League at this stage.
It'll probably depend how the other ones keep going in Europe. If everyone else has games midweek, which they likely will, Villa.
That was supposed to be like this mad handicap where you couldn't play any players. They've no games. They've no games. And now it's like, wow, they've no games. It's amazing. Well, funny how the glass turns half full from half empty.
It just is like it's bound to be beneficial if there's a reduced number of what you have to think about. Like, you'd suspect. I don't know.
Oh, it's massively beneficial. He's got a first team. Everybody knows they're playing or they're not playing or they're hoping for an injury from one of their teammates. And
but I do think it'll go right down to the wire, to your point. I do think it'll come into the last 2-3 games. It'll still be kind of up in the air. Maybe one of them has kind of gone on a bit, but because Villa are going to get sucked back into it.
It's a weird league. Like, it's no one that great. I'll trust them when they lift the trophy.
You still suspecting they won't do it?
No. But I mean, I think they'll do it because I just can't see a viable alternative. Okay. I can't see anyone else going to win the league. I just can't. So I think they will do it. But like, you know, the burden of proof is on them, like, to lift the trophy. And once they do it, it's like, great. Like, I've always said they're very, very good. I've said it for 2 years now. They're very good. And they could about to become great. This League Cup, if they win this League Cup, that would really help them.
Yeah, look,
First trophy in front of the fans for Arteta.
It's funny how Odegaard is one of those very voguish, trendy players. Whoever's like, oh, he comes back from injury. And it was, oh, wow, we've really missed him. But then Henry Winter on the show yesterday, has he done it in a big game against a good team? Has he?
He did it in the Villa game.
I would say Odegaard's a brilliant player. I
think they're not. I think they're better with Eze. That's my theory. Well, and we'll see. But I think if Havertz comes back into the team, Eze, and if Saka has some form over the next 6-8 weeks, then everybody will be like, oh, that's a good slew of attacking players. The good Andy Farrell comments on Bundyaki this morning, because there was some suggestion that maybe this was it. Bundyaki had dirtied his bib to the point where Irish rugby and Andy Farrell were going to turn their back on him, but that's not the case.
Can I dig into the etymology of that? Dirty your bib is presumably a baby. Is that a kind of... A baby has a bib.
Yeah.
Could a baby dirty their bib so much that you'd walk away from them? Just leave them. You're on your own now.
It's an idiom used in professional or career context. It means do not ruin your reputation, damage your professional standing, or burn bridges when leaving a job.
Okay. Just interesting.
That's what it
says. Yeah.
Babies ruin their reputation when they're messy eaters.
I'm just wondering. I'd associate a bib with a baby. I don't think you cut the baby adrift.
Ah, no, but it's, you know, we all wear the, it's like the Italian, it's like the...
Oh, okay, like an arrest. Okay.
Yeah. It's like, so you know, you've got your...
When you're eating.
It's a place with a white tablecloth.
Yeah, and you put it there.
Is the soup good?
Yeah.
You know, that's good? Totally died out in dining.
Yeah.
If you're in a restaurant, no one's doing that at all anymore.
No, it's
nobody.
It's uncouth.
At best, you're doing it down here.
I do it to annoy my children. Because they're all wearing...
Tuck in the full thing.
Like. Oh, yeah. What are you doing? What are you embarrassing us like this for? Why do you have to do that to us in public? I'm like, just to annoy you. And also because they should be doing it because we're the ones end up having to wash the clothes and end up... They do dirty their bibs.
You haven't turned your back on them.
I haven't, no.
No, no. Keep coming back.
The night is young. Anyway, back to Bundyaki. A lot of... he's sorry, Farrell says. I spoke to Bundy. He's certainly sorry for what happened. He's apologised to the right people. He'll be working hard at home. If needed, he'll certainly be available for us down the track. So he will come back into the contention in the squad. Farrell says that he wasn't involved in the decision. It was a big blow for any team, not just by his talent as a player, but his presence, his experience and all of that. I was privy to what was going on behind the scenes, but I was being told what was happening and I didn't know what was happening as far as the URC or the hearing and all of that. So I was told along the way what needed to happen. And then they're talking about the general point of discipline. So, and then they list off who's missing. Aki, Andrew Porter, Paddy McCarthy, Jack Boyle, Tyke Furlong, Ryan Baird, Robbie Henshaw, Mac Hansen, Hugo Keenan. All gone. So, yeah. I was wondering about this. The RFU are going to throw the book at him. Or are they? Was there a mad outcry when Johnny Sexton went on the field and gave Wayne Barnes an earful? Was there a mad outcry against Sexton and like how he needed to be banned and not allowed to play in the World Cup and stuff? And
Sexton was just consistently doing that, wasn't he? Which kind of makes you hide in plain sight. He was always chirping away at refs, wasn't he?
But he wasn't playing that day. He was in a suit.
Yeah.
I
came down from the stands European Cup. To wander onto the pitch.
The European Cup final.
Yeah, was there a backlash against him? Like, oh, he needs
I
to
think
be
there was a little
of.
Bit, but I think people were distracted by the result more, weren't they? And the celebrations. There was a little bit. There was definitely a little bit of talk a few weeks after Regent had done that.
I think there was really like, are you clown? Like, what are you doing? Especially when it impacted Ireland. But
yeah, but people got over it quickly.
I think there's a sense that like, oh, let's get rid of this. Like all the
no, but it's timing.
Columnists
everything's timing. Everything's timing. Sexton was the end of the season. There was nothing else to talk about afterwards. This is on the eve of Six Nations when there's an injury crisis and now there's another player gone missing. So it's like, what are you doing that for? I think it's all the context of time. People will get over this very quickly.
Well, the columnists I'm saying are like, this guy needs to pay a price for this because referees are sacrosanct. Whereas with Sexton, it was like, well, he'll do his time. But, hopefully he'll be back in time for us to play for the World Cup.
Okay, to follow on the point, because he's expendable and Sexton wasn't.
Yeah, well, there's that.
So it's easy to point the finger. Like, there are options at centre despite the theme of crisis at the moment with unavailability. Like, there is options at centre. Not huge depth, but they can make do without Bundyaki. And they may have done anyway. Even if he was available, he may not even have made a 23 tomorrow night. There's a possibility he wouldn't have.
Possibly as well with the thing, wasn't it? I forget the guy's name. But like, Hansen last year, wasn't it? After whatever Connacht game where he came out and
Yeah,
that was before Christmas, yeah.
So like the fact that it's kind of a...
Crosby.
Yeah, but like there was the fact that again, that it's a Connacht thing again, that it's kind of, it's like we kind of like, you know what you're not supposed to do here. Like it is kind of, it's a, like the Sexton thing, it's probably arguably worse, but like it's just kind of like, ah, Christ, like what are you doing? Like you know you can't do this.
Yeah.
And just to be kind of getting yourself in that position, it just seems careless, like.
I was interested in Andy Farrell's comments about it, like that he said there's a window of opportunity here for Bundy to come back for the last two games. And I could see that happening. Like if Ireland lose to France and then Ireland lose to England and they're unconvincing against Italy and they win, I could definitely see a call back for Bundyaki. It's like, bring him back in, we need something different.
And
it will all be, he'll come out and he'll apologise and he'll probably get a, well, hey, when he comes onto the pitch.
Well, from the fans, yeah.
And then the rest is history.
Hey. I don't think he'll be jettisoned at all, will he?
Well, I don't, but the talk of, you see, all these Connacht players extending their deals, a couple of centres are doing it recently, like our own Cahill Ford, one of them, our pal, and his hasn't. So his future's in doubt, and maybe it's like, well, this is the end of him really as an entity in Ireland, because he's about to leave Connacht relatively soon.
The Ireland coach said he did not make the decision to stand the Connacht star down before he'd gone before a URC disciplinary hearing, but was kept informed by the IRFU, who are launching an internal investigation into the events at the Dexcom Stadium after Connacht's defeat to Leinster last month. So
the thing about internal investigations is there's zero transparency.
Yeah.
What happens in those things?
Well, so the IRFU are obviously managing different constituencies. Now their head coach has come out and said, I want him for the last couple of games.
He's a possibility.
I want him. He will be available to us according to the current suspension. If you suspend him for longer than that, you are acting against my interests, which are your interests, because every game we win gets you more money. The IRFU also have to keep the baying hounds of the referees, who are like, one of our lads took some abuse from this guy. I want the book thrown at him. The same way you threw the book at Johnny Sexton. Oh, wait, you didn't. That's all I'm saying.
They won't. I bet you a fiver they won't extend it.
Fiver.
I bet you they won't, right? It's an internal investigation. We'll never know what was said or done, ever. They'll never have to justify the decision one way or the other. If any fella wants him available, they'll make him available. I was like, okay, don't do it. Because you could argue, well, they're punishing, he's being punished twice.
Tell me.
What's that double jeopardy? Trial twice?
Yeah, but this isn't.
This is punished twice.
Well, it's the same crime and it's the same process.
So you can't try the same crime.
Well, you can't.
Punish same crime.
Yeah.
Rugby's double jeopardy with Bundyaki.
Sexton was hit with a 3-game ban in 2023.
For that. Yeah. So the start of the following season.
Remember he missed all the Rugby World Cup warm-up matches. That was heading into the World Cup in 23.
Oh, yeah.
That's why it was so...
Like the single most important time.
It was crazy.
So, okay, so... And the ban
finished just before the World Cup started.
Did he have one warm-up game or no warm-up game?
His first game was Romania.
Which was the second game of the World Cup after Scott.
Did they not train in... Am I misremembering? Yeah, did they... Was
the first.
Was another was game first, inserted?
Yeah. To make sure that... I don't know.
There was a friendly really close to it in France. I don't think he played that game.
No, he wouldn't have... So he was banned for three, which would have been...
Brought him up to the first game of the...
I think his first game back was the first game.
So you could argue by the time it came to New Zealand quarterfinal, he was still getting sharp.
You could argue. And also that nobody else got the opportunity in the World Cup to get that. And therefore, that's the butterfly effect. The wings flapped and we go out against New Zealand because he wanders onto the pitch and starts saying stuff to the referee.
So to bring us to the, and bring us to the modern day.
I link these things. I think they're inextricably linked.
Aki got the same number of games? Three? Boak got three? Same infringement, three games.
It must be. Well, if he's missed three Ireland games, I'm not sure if Connacht games fall in between it, if there's any URC in between or if it's all gone.
There was Connacht games, yeah.
But it would have been four then, because he's missed the Connacht game. So anyway, similar punishment time for the same offence.
I'd arguably say the sixth one was worse. But
Bundyaki banned for four games by URC disciplinary committee after abusing match officials. And was one of them suspended? Or was it...
He must have went mad at him. Do we know what he said?
No.
I know we can't repeat it. But no. Sure.
No.
I don't know. The only vibe again is it's persistent. It was persistent and persistently disrespectful. So he got punished. Sexton was out in the open and Aki wasn't. That's the other thing. So we kind of saw what Sexton was doing. We didn't see what Aki was doing. People are annoyed because of the timing of this. Like, it's the last thing we need to know. But
no mitigation. Jesus,
you've killed us here.
I don't know.
People had time to sit in with Sexton too, because a few months later that ban was enacted. Other sport happened, he comes in and is like, oh yeah, he's missing because of that thing. But that's what makes Johnny Johnny. That would have been the rebuke. He's a serial winner. Sometimes he goes over the edge.
I do think there was condemnation.
Wasn't he playing that day?
He wasn't even playing, no.
He was in a suit.
He was furious and he still wanted his province to win.
Of course he did, yeah.
A much overdue Champions Cup. So of course he was there.
I'm just saying that I think that there is a gross hypocrisy in people's treatment of Bundy versus that. And you disagree, fair enough.
What do you think? You think you should be grand?
No, I just think that different people are held to different standards.
Well, we can't be giving out all the time about refs treating Ireland badly and then going like, well, we'll call you whatever the hell we want. And don't even dare criticise us for it.
I think people should be held accountable for their actions. I think that rugby has this thing where no feedback is allowed except for the captain. The referees are arrogant. The referees are coaching players. The referees have become a lot of main character energy in them. The inconsistency in the refereeing is never allowed to be spoken about. There is incredible pressure on them. The abuse that they get online is horrific. Multiple things are competing. And I don't think Mac Hansen... And Bundyaki, what they said was so egregious that they should be banned for like a tenth of the season.
Well, we don't know what
quarter of the season.
We don't know what Sandy said.
Sure, fair enough. But like, anyway,
I just think
that different people are held to different standards. That's all I'm pointing out. I think that like
possible. I don't know.
But Sexton got banned.
Like who? But
anyway, okay.
And it affected Ireland's World Cup preparations.
I just want to know who. I want to look into it. I want to move on,
right? Because Dennis Walsh wrote a great piece yesterday about nostalgia and Mario Kempes coming up on his YouTube feed.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to Dennis a little bit later on. I don't know if we'll get an opportunity to speak to him about that, but In Generation X, Douglas Copeland said nostalgia is a weapon. I'm not sure he understood that it was going to be weaponized the way it has been. I would argue it's pretty dangerous. I would argue that it feeds into the worst excesses of the politics and the bullshit that we've seen in the last 15 years in particular, where there's a harping after some golden period in the past that didn't actually exist, but that is held up as one, and so that we all lose our critical thinking and our critical faculties by virtue of the fact that Mario Kempe's goal comes up, and I feel great.
All the history of humankind is cyclical. There will be a more peaceful time again. There will be a more democratic time. If you look back at the history of humankind, every 3 or 4 decades will change again. So we're in this kind of quote-unquote toxic place right now. It'll be slightly more liberal again in a couple of decades. Then it will go back again in another few decades' time when we're probably gone. If you look back in the cycle, I don't think it's necessarily to do with social media. It exasperates the human emotion that already existed. Every generation before us would have been the same if social media existed. We're just the first with it.
And you're saying it has no impact?
No, I don't think it's the sole reason. It just exasperates the emotions, like, as in people get angrier quicker as a result now. Things demand more, though. Faster, I'm way more impatient.
The time is collapsing.
Nostalgia is a comfort blanket as a result. But you're thinking it's weaponized.
It has become weaponized, definitely. And
I mean, in the worst excesses of history, like, it's always harkened back to something from before that was more comfortable. I don't think that's new.
Yeah, I mean, I would use sporting nostalgic elements, you would say, are fairly innocent. Yes? In a sporting sense.
No, I think it's all bad.
Because looking back is bad, or because you're taking stuff from then?
Perpetually being absolute prisoners of everything that has gone on, and it's like everything is now, like, we're now, I'm aware of my history and I'm familiar with my stuff. It's like...
No, it's because like, people are miserable now, so they look back at a time when they were happier.
Yeah. And
the past is always better, like, because now you have to face the future and it's unknown.
Except that's untrue, right?
Yeah, but that's the human condition.
All right.
I'm quite excited about the future.
So we read this piece this morning before, and you both read it, this Mario Kempe's piece, right? And then as soon as we finished that conversation, got up, looked at my phone, and the first thing I was shown was it's David Villa's birthday. Look at this goal he scored for Valencia from the halfway line. I was like, oh, that was amazing. And then I'll just watch that goal repeatedly because it makes me happy.
Bit of a fella, David Villa.
You'll
look it up afterwards.
I am
not a good fella.
I've opened up my...
Just looking at him as a footballer.
Twitter feed this morning.
Art and the artist, you know.
The top scorers list from this week in 1992 is like literally the first thing that it opens on. Goalhanger Supreme Gary Lineker tops the list with Ian Wright and Alan Shearer in the chasing pack. Meanwhile, in Division 2, John Aldridge's shooting boots are still firing live rounds. 28 goals ahead of some Shearer at Swindon. But John Aldridge has scored 28 goals for Tranmere, and one of his teammates happens to be on the line right now. Pat Nevin, good morning.